You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Seven PM, it being, of course, the 24th of January, 2023. Thank you so much for staying with us. If you have been with us from 6 PM this evening, we really, really appreciate it. For those of you joining us now, thank you as well. Welcome to the family. And of course, we're doing this until 8 PM this evening. It being a Tuesday, of course, means that everything that we do and talk about today has to do with technology. And we are tackling a subject that I think is not only of national importance, but I think it's a subject of international importance, if there is such a thing. Well, I hope I didn't just coin my own words there. But nonetheless, the point is that it is a thing that affects everyone the world over. And so it is a very important conversation. This is the second installment of the ones that we're going to have over the next few weeks. We are right in the middle of that particular series. And it is a pleasure always to talk to Ms. Faith Kumalo. She is a cybersecurity professional with extensive knowledge and experience in this particular field. She specializes in both red team operations, particularly GRC and vulnerability management. And she is recognized as a thought leader in the industry. Now, in addition to her work as a cybersecurity professional, she is also the founder of Red Shark Security, which is a company dedicated to providing top quality cybersecurity and physical security services to clients. Of course, they help their clients secure their business reputation. Ms. Kumalo is also a member of the Eritmus Inc. IT and a cybersecurity company based in the U.S., where she serves as a mentor under the leadership of Dr. Emmanuel Adu, a retired veteran. In her free time, she is a dedicated mother of two. And as always, it is a pleasure to talk to you this evening, ma'am. Good evening.
Good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And yourself?
I'm good.
Ah, how was your day?
My day? I've been trying my best to save my battery life.
Ah, I can imagine.
Yeah, so that I have this phone on.
Ah, thank you for that. Is it load shedding, I'm sure?
Yes, I'm shed it right now. So. But it's fine. I'm glad that the network is on our side.
Yes, certainly, certainly. I think this thing of load shedding, you know, it's I'm personally one of those that are just over the conversation about load shedding. I don't know about you. Like, I really don't want to be talking about load shedding because it's just so disheartening, you know. It's just so disheartening. Maybe what we should just focus on is on the lighter side of life, flowers, you know, looking at flowers in the morning in a load shedded area. Just go and pick flowers and just smile, I suppose. So I'm choosing that for my own sanity, because otherwise, hey, this load shedding is just going to drive us, I suppose, up the wall if it hasn't already. So yeah, I can imagine and I understand. Okay, today we're talking about cybersecurity frameworks and policies that my listeners who are business people and suppose also those who are in this space might want to know. So thank you so much, ma'am, once again for joining us. What are cybersecurity frameworks?
These are best practices. And
okay,
I would urge every business person now to listen to this because this information that I give, It's kind of like free consultation.
Oh,
although I'm not going to speak about how to implement and stuff like that, but it's going to help to give the light on what can businesses do, especially small to medium, without breaking their bank, you know.
Yes.
I urge every business person to actually tune in right now to listen to this conversation.
Yeah.
I'll do my best to share everything that I know.
Mm.
So best practices, because we have established that when we prepare ourselves on time before the incident, we're able to do our best to respond.
Okay.
So we've got different kinds, so many frameworks, but today I'm going to speak about some of them that I recommend to businesses.
Mm. Okay, so cybersecurity frameworks, like you said, these are best practices that businesses can implement way ahead of time, right? So in a more proactive way rather than in a reactive way, I suppose, right? And I think that's always the best way. That's always the best policy, the best way to work around such things, especially when they have to do with our businesses, the ones that we run, especially small businesses as well. And it would be great for people, I suppose, who are listening and see this as very valuable, as they should, to actually reach out to your company as well in terms of implementation, right? That is Red Shark Security. So I fully agree with you. Okay, so the foundation is that when you're talking about cybersecurity frameworks, we're talking about best practices that you can implement proactively in your company so that you protect yourself against cyber attacks as well. Okay, now what are the benefits? Why must we implement a cybersecurity framework?
The benefit is that you are able to know your business security requirements on time.
Okay.
Okay, so for an example, if you're a finance company, you know what kind of compliance you need to fall under or to follow.
Yeah.
If you are another kind of business, you can follow another framework. Because if you are not prepared for an incident, it becomes very difficult for you to detect or identify if there's someone who's trying to maybe plant phishing in your organization. Mm. Remember last week I did mention to you that the hackers or the cyber criminals, they don't do crime same day. They actually plan.
Mm.
So while they are planning on their side, we should be actually be planning on our side by looking at best practices that we can follow in terms of frameworks. These frameworks, most of them, like the frameworks for NIST, was first established in 1901.
Mm.
So it was to fight the World War in the U.S. You know? So you can imagine how clever that was, because now, as I said last year, that the war might not be physical.
Mm.
The war might be online.
Mm.
So they implemented this. And the good thing about the NIST is that I love it because it's free.
Mm.
It's out there.
Mm.
But the problem now comes, you would not know which one to pick because there's a lot of information. They actually have standard for everything, almost everything. That some of the things I do not know. I only know my own area.
Yeah.
So it is actually good for you to prepare, actually good for you to know what kind of employees you must employ.
Mm.
For example, we've got the NIST special publication. So today I'm going to touch more on special publications that I want businesses I'm recommending to businesses.
Yeah.
So special publication 800-101 and 181, it talks about workforce. So the people that you can hire from the chief security officer down to the lower level, so that you are able to know what kind of soldiers you need for your business.
Mm.
So those are soldiers because they are actually security guards at your work for your system, you see.
Yeah. Okay. Just to take you a bit of a step back there, you mentioned preparedness or alertness, be able to detect planning, you know, ahead of these guys as they're planning to, I suppose, attack your company and whatever, you're also planning to defend yourself against that. And I think you also mentioned that, for instance, some of these frameworks, if I understand you very well, are industry specific. Yes, there's a plethora of them, there's a lot of them, but they are industry specific. So in other words, if I understand you well, you're saying any company that's in the finance sector must know what type of cybersecurity risk that they might have, and so put together the frameworks that are aligned to that particular industry.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's very true.
And then the ones in the mining space, they must do the same as well, and all that. Now, my question then would be, from your own experience, right, what are the industries that are more likely to be at risk? I know finance would be banks. I mean, everyone wants to bomb a bank somehow, especially now that we are all under, you know, financial stress. I mean, we want to bomb a bank. Of course, we're not promoting that. But I think they should have the biggest risk, I suppose. And maybe government as well, because they really run quite a lot of information about citizens and stuff like that. So the Department of International Relations, they would have that. Because I was actually listening to the news, and this is me going on and on, you see. But I was listening to the news that Russia is here, right? And now that Russia is here, they are doing these military parades somewhere in Cape Town. And the world over was like, why is South Africa welcoming Russia, for instance, you know? And so the minister, Naledi Pandor, was saying, no, but we do this with every other country. We do this with the US. No one was saying anything. We did this with, you know, England. No one was saying, as a way to prepare ourselves, should we be attacked, we might need to call on Russia to assist. So we're trying to see if we can build some sort of ways and rapport amongst each other to say, let's say we are being attacked, and this is just an example, we are being attacked by Britain, we can call on the US, and the US, because we've made drills together, we've had our soldiers and military practicing together, would know how to defend ourselves and defend our country. And maybe America is in the same and needs South Africa. So there's that thing that they're having there. And so they're saying there's that need. So I'm just thinking there could be maybe one or two or three big ones that are, you know, at risk. And so these cybersecurity frameworks are most important.
Every business is at risk. So, but for your question, yes, financial industry and the government. They are mostly at risk because, as I told you, that the cyber criminals, most of the time they want the money. So the money is with the bank, the money is with the insurance. You know, so insurance has suffered a lot of fraud in the last 5 years or so. So there are standards that they can put as well, that some of them have put in place as well. So you find that in South Africa, the standard that I've seen most companies prefer is the ISO, because the ISO is able to call in business, especially business to partnering with the government. So you are able to get the contract because you are ISO compliant. So also, ISO is able to, actually easy to follow. So once somebody like me show you, this is how you do it, you can actually have a guy inside the company to watch over it. You understand? However, it is quite expensive to implement it, you know? Yes, it's quite expensive. It can be range from 50,000 to about 120,000 once off. But the lovely thing is that if you get a proper company, they're going to be with you from the beginning of the implementation until the execution, and actually stay a little bit, maybe 3 months
To support you
And train the staff that that are everyday staff in your company. You understand? So the ISO, another thing why I think the government love the ISO is because there's already ISO 900 that talks about the, I think it talks about the quality, stuff like that. That's not for cybersecurity, but 900, if the government really like that standard for most of our businesses. So when you've got 900, you've got 27001, which is cybersecurity, you're likely to get more of the contract than the counterparts. So ISO is also... it's also good according to me, because it allows you to merge it with other standards. You can, for an example, in my company, we can implement ISO for you. But the questions that we ask are from NIST. So those questions that we have compiled together from the NIST framework, they're able to help us determine the requirement of the business. And then we're able to roll out the implementation better and to charge better, because those questions will then tell us how big is the problem and how small is the problem that the business has. Because most businesses, they already have these things in place.
Yeah.
It's just that they don't know that it is cybersecurity. For example, most businesses, they have got maybe idling time for your computer or laptop of 15 minutes. That is cybersecurity, you know. That is cybersecurity, but they don't know. So out of those questions that we ask, we are able to establish, okay, this business is already doing this, so they are used to this.
Mm.
And I saw a NIST and the other standards that I am going to talk about, they emphasize a lot on training the staff.
Mm.
That is one of the controls. So the idea with these frameworks is to put control for each and every area that we think is going to need security. For example, password security, email security, physical security, tech security, all these kind of controls. So, for example, I did talk about the CSI, I don't know.
Yeah.
So the CSI framework will give you about 18 controls. And those 18 controls will then be able to cover almost everything for your business, especially if the business is small. You see, so yes, ISO is the one that most companies are rolling out here in South Africa. Most companies are really, really save up to be able to roll out that ISO 27001.
Yeah, no, that gives really great background on why the standards are important and what sort of benefits they give to us. And that ISO one you mentioned is quite critical. 29 minutes after 7 p.m. Thank you so much for joining us. And if you've just joined us, we are talking to Ms. Faith Khumalo, and we're looking at cybersecurity and some of the cybersecurity frameworks and policies that your business actually needs. Now, I think everyone is talking about POPI. Or the POPI Act. It's almost like a buzzword these days. You will never find anyone who doesn't know POPI. Well, I suppose the word POPI, but a lot of us don't even know what POPI is, but we just POPIfy everything. POPI this, POPI that, POPI that. So what exactly is POPI?
Yeah, POPI. I like the fact that POPI is actually a good name that even kids know about.
Yeah, it's like COVID.
I love it. I love it when people are aware about certain standards and compliance and stuff like that, and it's easier for to get to them. So this is data protection standard or law that we implemented in South Africa. We actually modeled it out of the European standard.
I'm sure.
GDPR, yes. It's a similar thing, just that they call it different name, we call it another name. Make sure that we protect people's information and to give the people, the public, the power to protect their own information. As you're saying that POPI everywhere, sometimes you can call maybe a client and say, no, I cannot give you this information over the phone for POPI Act reasons. Even though they don't know what it actually means, for the fact that they're able to defend themselves using this standard, it melts my heart. You know? So that, in other words, POPI Act is just to empower the public, you know, to empower the people. When the people are empowered, it's easy for us to go ahead and be secure as a country or as the whole world.
So what the objective is to empower the people, right?
Yes.
And why is that important for individuals to know about it, maybe?
Because, you know, if you are subscribing to something that is free, you might be the service if you are not paying. So if you are the service, what else will that platform need from you, state of your money or your information? So they will need your data.
Okay.
They need your data. So you need to be able to understand the kind of security standards that a certain platform needs to have for you. You see, so for example, if you get to online, maybe you want to buy groceries online, and instead of asking you the card number, they ask you account number. You're going to be, wow, no, this one, I cannot do this, because that is not the usual way that is introduced to the people. So the POPI Act has made all the people, most people, to be aware of what is needed where.
Yeah.
You see? So, yeah, so this example of the card, it's actually a big issue because the standard that is, it dwells exactly with the card issue, MasterCard, Visa, and stuff like that. So one day we're going to, that standard is very important.
That's interesting.
It's mandatory. It's unlike the ISO. The ISO is recommended. The NIST is recommended. The CIS is recommended. But that one, it's a must to have it. Every business must have it. So next time we're going to touch on it. It's called PCI DSS.
Yeah.
So that talks about money, because as you asked which one, this industry is suffering a lot of attacks. It's the industry that has money.
That has money.
So, yes. So the MasterCard, Visa, and the other people have actually come together to produce a standard that will make sure that the people are safe.
Now, I just want to take a step back a little bit on this one. So before we didn't have the Poppy Act, was there anything in place, or just that our information was just at risk and no one was thinking about consolidating that and protecting it?
I don't know anything else besides Poppy. And you asked about being prepared, the business must prepare, and how important it is. And the introduction of Poppy has made it easy for even businesses to prepare themselves, not to give their own information. I can tell you that businesses are suffering also in terms of being hacked and stuff like that, and their information being stolen.
Yeah.
You find an email as if it's from a government body telling you about specifications so professional. I can try and send you one example. So professional, it will tell you we need this specification, this and that, all you need to do, send documents of your company, everything that is needed, just to find that your company is going to be hijacked.
Sure. So it would look like it's from a company that you're perhaps looking for procurement opportunities from, and you're thinking, hey, this is what I've been looking for, and here I am sending my company information with the hope that it's going to the right company, only to find that when you call that company, like, we never asked for anything like that.
So, and the way they do it, they no longer ask for millions. They'll do small tender, maybe 50,000. You know, it's doable. Sometimes you say, ah, this I can add to my business and be able to pitch then, then, then.
Yeah.
The 50,000, if you didn't get it back, it's a lot of money. Yes, it might seem like it's small for a tender, but it's a lot of money if you give it to criminals. So Poppy Act, before Poppy Act, I don't know of any other standard.
Yeah.
The only standard that was available is the one in Europe. So because we try and want to, we want to make sure that internationally we are recognized as a country.
Yeah.
We do develop model or model frameworks that similar to what the world is doing. We don't have our own NIST, we don't have our own framework for cybersecurity as yet, or that I know of, but at least we've got Poppy Act. That's a start.
Certainly. We also don't want to be viewed by the international community as investor risky, because we don't have such, I suppose, policies in place as a country to protect us and maybe, you know, put us in a good stead with the world over. So I think they are quite important, and our information is very important.
I can tell you something. The Poppy Act has worked for all of us. You know, there was this woo-ha when WhatsApp started giving us security alert, security problems. Actually, Poppy Act did fight for us. They wrote some statements that actually disagreed with what they wanted to do. It actually seemed like they wanted to, allegedly wanted to steal information from people who are outside certain countries.
Okay.
So there was actually defense from the Poppy Act, which is done by information regulator. So that's why I am really happy about the Poppy Act. I wish we can try and emulate some of the standards that we can use freely, you know, that are similar to ISO or NIST. But I'm sure there are organizations out there implementing that.
37 minutes after 7 p.m. If you've just joined us, welcome to Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. It is a Tuesday and it is Tech Tuesday, and we've started this series, which is very important, with Ms. Faith Khumalo on cybersecurity. We started last week, and today we're looking at cybersecurity frameworks, particularly just now talking about the Poppy Act. I know that there was, like you said, there as well, a hoo-ha around, yo, this Poppy Act, what does it mean? Our information, blah, blah. And I think a lot of us were just afraid of it, prematurely because we didn't understand what it is and what is it that it was hoping to achieve. And just like you said, it has helped us. I think I hear almost every now and then the other social media platform, which starts with an F, the owner is always taken to court over people's information, isn't it?
Yes, I've heard about that, but I don't have much more information about that.
Yes, I always hear he's always in some court somewhere about people's information that's sitting on. I suppose it's that country's version of Poppy.
Yes.
Okay.
That country's version of Poppy is very strict.
Yeah.
Because that country can sue for anything.
I know those ones. they sue for a pen that has fallen down.
Yes, you eat some food from a fast food, you gain weight, you sue. Why do you eat that? I'm telling you the truth.
They're hectic, eh?
Yes.
Okay, what are the consequences of non-compliance to Poppy?
It depends on how big is the organization. That
okay.
is up to 10 million.
That's a lot of money.
And for individual imprisonment, about 12 months.
Wait. Did you just say for individuals it's imprisonment for 12 months?
Yes.
You
can go to prison.
For holding people's private information?
Yes, for also misusing them. So if I call a company A and I ask them, or company A keeps on calling me, selling something to me, and I tell them, delete my information.
Yes.
And they don't delete the information. If I report them to the information regulator, they might be in trouble for not taking instruction from the owner of their name and the surname, you see. Why are they not taking the instruction from the owner of the cell number?
Isn't that bad for businesses? I'm sure there are businesses that were making money out of that particular, service or whatever. And they were not necessarily using the information of people in a malicious way, but it was business for them. And so as good as Poppy is it not the on the left working towards, you know, making a lot of people unemployed here and businesses out?
No. That's where we need the lawyers, the attorneys, because there's a way you can put a disclaimer for clients in order for them to allow you to use the information. And I'm sure you've also read or hear they say they want to use it for marketing, you need to click a button or to accept that.
Yeah.
So if you can have that kind of disclaimer, you're safe. Even if a client takes you to, or a person, individual takes you to the information regulator, what they're going to do, the information regulator, they're going to ask you what are the measures you put in place to protect people's information. However, there's a twist, as you're saying. So I can be a company safeguarding my client's information, but I've got a hacker who hacks the information. So also that's where you need the company lawyer to actually draft another maybe disclaimer or whatever policy document that they can do to not take responsibility in a way, but in a nicer way. You know, lawyers, they know how to put these things in order. Yes, so you put that kind of disclaimer. Just like when you enter a building, they tell you that if something happens, this building falls, we are not responsible.
You're not responsible.
Yeah, enter at your own risk. I think that's what they write.
And I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking the cost of actually, you know, taking a lawyer to do all those sort of stuff and maybe sometimes engaging your company as well, Red Shark Security, to do that. I'm thinking I'm a small business here and I'm trying to survive and I have to now be faced with those costs. But I suppose the long-term implications are that you are compliant, you are seen to be a good corporate citizen, and so even when you go out for tenders and work and all that, you are seen to. So you might just increase your chances of maybe, you know, you might have spent 20,000 rands on that Poppy Act and police and whatever, but if it can unlock 200,000 rands of procurement opportunities, maybe you might just want to do that. But A, I'm sure for small businesses, that might be a little bit of an inconvenience. Is there information
Oh, yes, I know that it is difficult for small businesses. I think there's an opportunity that we do not see.
So
we've got a lot of graduates or attorneys who just got admitted. I don't know, and I don't know why we never use those people.
Mm.
You know, you find them at police stations running after this, running after that. Mm. While we are here looking for their services and we do not hire them, I don't know whether it's because we don't trust them, but they are qualified. They whoever body gave them that qualification, trust that they can do the
job. They can do the job.
And yes, and it's not like you need an attorney to stand up for you in a criminal case. You just need documentation which are done once, and disclaimers that are done once. If you need to upgrade, maybe it could be maybe after a year or so or stuff like that. Just one payment. And if we've got those kind of controls like POPI Act, frameworks, it's easy for you to get stakeholders who have money, because nobody wants to just put their money anywhere. They want to see that you're serious.
Mm.
You must show seriousness that I'm serious. This is what I've done. This is how I safeguard the information of my clients.
Mm.
These are the frameworks that I use for security so that they know that, okay, we are putting money somewhere where there is life, where there is processes and defense.
Okay, that makes sense. I was about to ask, is there information that's not protected by the POPI Act?
Is there information that's not protected by POPI Act?
Yes, that isn't protected by the Act.
I don't know of any, but I just know that the one that is protected. The reason why I don't know of any is because POPI Act, it's not done yet. I don't know the right way. It is not the final cut that they have released now.
Yeah.
So what they're trying to do, they're trying to implement the first draft so that they can see what kind of information is used by the cyber criminals. That way they will keep on adding to say, okay, even name of your child or whatever that they will add. So it is continuous work. It's a journey that's going to be upgraded always. But ID number, cell phone number, email address, and as well as your postal address, those are the four information that I know. However, if you are a business, you've got the responsibility to actually identify what kind of information you keep from clients, you know, as well as like hospitals, they've got their own standard, like medical sector, they've got their own standard. It's called HIPAA. So that standard talks about how they should take care of the client's information and patient's information and patient's information and everything that they do at medical sector.
Hey, that's interesting. They must actually go to the patients themselves and remind them of the POPI Act, because what we see on social media, patients taking videos of themselves, you know, we're like, hey, yeah, but this, you shouldn't be showing us some of these things, but it's interesting to learn about such things as well. Okay, let's look at incidents response policies there. What exactly are those for businesses, incidents response policies?
So the reason why I want to talk about that is because the time you've implemented these best
practices,
you need to be able to know how to respond. And you need to respond quick. And yes, weekend I was reading a report by a big tech company, and they wrote about a company that was able to respond to a ransomware incident within 59 seconds. So that is very nice. So incident response will help you to be able to have business continuity, because you don't want to lose a lot of money because of incidents of criminals. You need to think like them. You see, that's why you need to hire proper people to represent you in security of your company, so that they're able to respond as quick as possible, just like they would do when you've got what you call casualty at the hospital. The doctors respond so quick. They run, they do everything. You need those kind of soldiers for your business. Soldiers, I mean, cybersecurity specialists who are going to respond so quick and know what to do. So if you put the policy, so in easier terms, what kills us is that we want to use terms that other employees do not understand.
Yeah.
You see, you must put your policy in such a way that it is readable and it is understandable.
Mm.
Yes, it is talking about cybersecurity, but it must be understandable by everybody, even the person who's not in cybersecurity, who's in payroll.
Mm.
They must be able to know this is what's going to happen should we have an attack online.
Sure. So it's very important to move from the gibberish to easier English that everyone can understand. Because some of these cybersecurity terms and whatever can be a little bit confusing. Incident and response, and you're thinking, okay, so what does that mean? Are there different stages to incident response, I suppose?
Yes, there are different stages.
Mm.
The first stage is to switch off the internet, to disconnect from the internet. Yes.
So when you attack, just switch off.
Yes.
Makes sense, though.
Yes, just switch off so that you are able to switch on the backup and check if the backup is not infected.
Okay, I've switched off. What do I do next?
You switch off. You need to. Now I'm gonna be taking out the business secrets, you know. So that will be
okay.
Of the incident policy, you know.
Okay. Like I said, people must contact you, Red Shark Security, there, if they want to get a sense of that. Now, an incident response, is it specific to a single type of business, or can I use it for different businesses, maybe?
You can use it. It is specific to a specific business.
Yeah.
Because it is made in such a way that it goes according to the culture of the business as well. Yes.
Mm.
So if that business is on site, and the computers are in the office and there's fewer people in the office, there's a way that we're going to write that, you know. Because we find that even the people on site, they have phones or whatever gadget that they are accessing the information.
Mm.
So they are accessing it remotely via VPN. So we need to be able to address the VPN incident response and the office incident response for that particular kind of business. But some businesses are completely in the office. So they will then write their own incident response policy according to how they are working.
Mm.
And also, the NIST 800-207, it's a zero trust. So zero trust just means that it's incidents that has never happened anywhere as yet.
Okay.
So there's a way that it's kind of like an architecture that we draft for businesses.
Yeah.
So that they are able to be ready for incidents that are new to the world. Yes, nothing is new in this world, but yes, we do have 0 day whereby something that we've never seen, you know, we need to be able to deal with that. So NIST 800, it's a special publication.
Yeah.
207 is able to address that. So if your company or your business has got a cybersecurity specialist, they can try and read on that and see if they can implement it. But as I said, NIST is a bit complicated.
Mm.
But a cybersecurity specialist will be able to execute it.
I see. Sure. What an insightful conversation. Again, if people need your services, how do they get a hold of you?
FaithKumalo3@gmail.com, FaithKumalo at LinkedIn, FaithKumalo Red Sharks, and 061-475-1526. It's the number that we use.
That we're using. Okay. Yes. Thank you so much, ma'am. Look forward to our next conversation next week.
It's already over. I thought we still go on.
No,
okay.
We are not even. We are not even. Look, I think there's a lot to still unpack here on this particular one. But, what a lot we've shared today. My mind is already fried, if there's such a thing.
Yeah,
so
no.
My mind is fried.
There's something that needs experience.
Yeah.
And, you work on, you are a cybersecurity person, it's easy for you to understand what I'm talking about. But I tried to put it
such
a way that, yes, because that's the reason why I made my newsletter, Mileware 360.
Ah, so we can subscribe to that newsletter?
Yes,
Mileware 360. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, is it online or we can email you on your email address to subscribe to it?
It's on LinkedIn.
It's on LinkedIn, right? It's Faith Kumalo Red Shark on LinkedIn. Okay, I got that one correct. I think a lot of us should actually subscribe to it because, wow, what a load of information that's quite clear and critical. I'm thinking here, hey, this Poppy Act, and now I must have an incidence report. So definitely we do need your services in helping us to ready ourselves. Preparedness is about being proactive. It's about making sure that you secure your company with the right framework, depending on the industry that you're in, to make sure that when these attacks happen, at least they find you prepared. 59 seconds response rate is the one that you're talking about. And I think every company wants to do that. I love the idea about once you get a text, switch off. Make sure you switch off and make sure that your backup is in place and you check your backup that it's also not attacked as well. Yeah. It's about preparedness. Ma'am?
And awareness.
And that's what we're doing right now, right? Creating awareness to make sure that people do know about that. It's a pleasure. And talking to you, it's such an amazing experience. And Godspeed. We shall continue again next week.
Wonderful. Cheers.
Thank you. That was Ms. Faith Khumalo there. She is a cybersecurity specialist from a company called Red Shark Security. And she can certainly, with her experience and from the way she articulates clearly and simply these very complicated concepts of cybersecurity, she makes us understand them. And it's such a pleasure talking to her, and the insights that she shares with us, I think, definitely invaluable.